Okay, welcome everybody to week four of Leisure and Relaxation in Halacha. As you're going to see, last year we'll actually have a bit in common with this year. Last year we talked about arts and crafts. We talked a lot about the halachos, the specific rules relating to arts and crafts from Rav Stav in his book, Bein HaZmanim. But one of the other things we talked about was the beauty of art, the beauty of aesthetics. That sounds awkward, because, yes. The value, I should say, of art, aesthetics, and beauty. And keeping that in mind, we tend to think of sports, which is going to be our topic for this week, as something that Judaism is really against. We think of it that way because we're told the Greeks were bodybuilders, and they were focused on their body, and therefore that's something that they do, and we don't play sports, we don't look at sports, we don't watch sports. That's almost like a goyish focus, some people might think. And I wanted to talk about sort of, again, as we've been doing the last few weeks, the topic of sports, both in terms of some background on it, taking a look at Jewish history, whether that be through Tanakh, the Gemara, or elsewhere, as well as talk about some of the values that different sources give us on whether or not sports is something good, and end with something that's more lahalacha, as to whether or not sports is something we should be engaging in, whether it be playing competitive sports, watching sports, following sports, whatever is happening there.
So I have a question at the outset. Is this dealing with fitness, or is it really sports?
That's actually what we're going to start with. We're going to start with a couple of sources that are more about fitness than about sports and really make that comment. People tend to confuse the two. I think that's a very important point, which is that people say, well, you see, it's valuable that people would be strong, right? Shimshon HaGibor, let's say, right? Shimshon, he was really strong. So therefore, Judaism likes sports. That's not sports. I agree with you. That's fitness. And we'll actually talk about maybe some of the reasons why fitness was valuable. Oh, okay, this is great. I see the Shul internet is not as great as it claims to be. Either way, so we will talk about that distinction between what I would consider, again, fitness and sports, and how fitness is valued, but even sport is valued above and beyond that, I think. Okay, so that's where we're at in terms of that, but an excellent question. You've really pinned me down on the first part of the shiur here. Okay, so let's begin, as we usually do, with a quote from Rav Stav. He gives us the Tanakh background of sports. Or at the very least, physical activity, in his Hebrew words. He says, "Kashe limtzo b'tanach mekorot mefurashim ham'odedim pi'ilut gufanit o sholimota." He says it's hard to find sources that exactly talk positively or negatively about physical activity. "Imzot yecholotehem ha'gufaniyot shel kama mehadmuyot ha'merkaziyot b'tanach zochot l'tiurim nirchavim u'muvlatim." Says there are, however, some of the descriptions of people's physical abilities in the Torah and in the rest of Nevi'im and Ksuvim is actually very, very expansive. Okay, kach l'mashal ha'mikra mazkiret kocho shel Yaakov Avinu asher ba lidei bitui b'glilat ha'evan ha'kfeida me'al ha'be'er. So number one, Yaakov, who, by the way, it's really funny because we kind of think of him as some weakling who's not quite, as strong as the powerful Esav, but Yaakov is described by the Torah as being really strong, right? When he rolls the stone, in what may even be a moment of adrenaline, perhaps, off the well, when he gets to Lavan's hometown. We also have after that, Uvma Avakoim Sarosh Shel Esav, right? When he fights with whatever physical, non-physical, whatever was going on, there seems to be some value, again, to his physical ability to fight. In that case, against Yisro Shel Esav, v'gam Shimshon v'David muskarim kanashim chasonim amsugalim lehe'avek fizit be'arayot uvdubim lohakotam. There are actually other people that we can quote from Tanakh who Tanakh praises as being, so strong that they were able to fight against large animals or whatever. I see that the Facebook experiment did not quite work out for us tonight, so that's the pausing. But it ended my video on me, so there we go. But yes, there are many people who can point to in Tanakh who they're praised by some sort of physical attributes, whether it be strength or anything else. Now,
doesn't that say that Joseph played tennis? He served in Pharaoh's court.
Dun dun dun! Excellent, excellent.
Mordechai was a goy.
Mordechai was a goalie. We'll actually see the origins of hockey, I think, today in the shir. There was no other way I would be able to get this. By the way, if any of you are interested, we'll have to see, because it appears that our numbers really took a dive this week. But if anybody's interested, I wanted to add one more shir to the end, and that is to discuss in our final week, meaning after next week, to add on one more shir about ping pong in Jewish literature. I've come across two tshuvos in particular about ping pong that I find absolutely fascinating. One which comments, on its status on Shabbos, including a large section talking about how when his neighbors play ping pong, it's so loud you'd think that they were inside his house, from a real rabbi in the 20th century, writing about this. The other one is even more humorous, not the Shiloh. The Shiloh actually is more common for the second one, which relates to table tennis, or really tennis, or what we call ping pong, between a husband and wife when they are in Nida. But it is actually a common Shiloh that people ask nowadays. Whatever, we'll refrain from judging. But interestingly, in that tshuva, he actually describes exactly how ping pong works. The Be'er Moshe, or Moshe Stern, he does you a whole section, like a good 2-3 paragraphs, in describing what exactly the sport of ping pong is, how it is played, and what is involved in playing the game. And it was fascinating. So maybe we'll do that if there is enough interest. If not, then we can do that. But anyways, we do, he talks about it and he continues. In other places in Tanakh, we talk about people who are very, very fast, okay? We talk about, in Midrashim, there's all sorts of expansion on certain characters. I remember I used to have a chavrusa with a friend of mine on Friday nights, and there was one week where we decided we were going to try to compare all the Midrashic versions of the Shvatim to superheroes, and which one was which Marvel superhero, right? You had the Flash, you had the Hulk, you had right, based on all these different descriptions of the different, holy people, but also as very, very strong or very, very talented in a particular area. Mm-hmm. So anyways, it's clear that certainly to some extent, even though the Torah might not say, physicality and physical ability is something praiseworthy, we get that impression. People that look big and strong, are definitely portrayed that way in the entire Tanakh. Now, if we move further, though, we actually get more a little bit to the actions involved in building strength, okay? And we're still not at sports yet, but the Tosefta in Shabbos mentions in source number 2 the idea of playing with a ball, okay? Playing with a ball on Shabbos and what will be the halachos. We'll get to a much more lengthy discussion of that in a little bit, so I'm going to hold off on that by now, but it's certainly mentioned that this is something that people were doing, 2,000 odd years ago, people were playing with balls. Now, it wasn't necessarily an organized sport, one against the other. It was some way of keeping fit, though, most likely. Rabbeinu Hananel, based on a Gemara, explaining a Gemara, says, what does it mean, avalo mitamlin? Perish, poshtin umkaplin zro tehen lifnehen ulachorehen. People, they get up and they do this. Now, it's really too bad we don't have Facebook, but they go like this, right? And people bending their arms, bending their legs, and doing some sort of exercise. And that's something also that he says is like an act of healing. And therefore prohibited, but it's clear that people were engaging in such behaviors. Now, is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? Why are people doing this? That's a really good question. So the first source that I wanted to bring sort of about that was something very, very interesting that's actually from fairly recently, which is from the Tshuvos Van Hagos. Tshuvos Van Hagos is written by Rav Sternbach. Rav Sternbach actually originally was a Rav in South Africa, I believe, and then only afterwards moved either back to Israel or maybe to Israel in first place. But anyways, a huge posek who needs no introduction, certainly. And he actually received a question from a Talmud Torah, from a boys' school, looking, to know what the role of sports should be in their school. And he responds to one particular point, which may give us, an idea about attitudes towards sports. And he says, he says, this you told me that if they increase the amount of sports that's played at the school, more students will come. He says, it's hard to believe that that's really, what you're supposed to be doing. On the other hand, he says, aval, al tadun chavercha ad shetagia limkomo. It's not for you to judge your friend until you reach his place. And that's what he says. Vim zot echrech. You should ask the rabbi there, and he'll decide if this is a good idea. He says, but if that's what has to happen, that's what has to happen. So one possibility, if we were to look at this, we would say, listen, we have things in Tanakh, we have things in Tosefta, and in the Gemara, and in the Mefarshim, and the Rishonim. Perhaps we could say that this is all just a bidieved. There are people that like these things. Do we think that that's a value? No. Right? Rosh Sternbach's very clear. This is a haras shah. If it's going to get people in the door, fine. Maybe because people were playing sports, this was just something that we had to address, right? Halacha can't ignore realities, even if it doesn't agree with them. Right? It can say, this is a mitzvah, this is an avera. Playing sports on Shabbos. No playing sports on Shabbos. Maybe we would just say that the reason why these things are discussed is because they're a reality. But we can move towards more positive views in the following sources. The Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, this is a bit of a heavier parak, you know, chapter 325. It's book 3, chapter 25. I'm sure one day the rabbi will get there in his shir, being that they're, you know, somewhere in book 1 still. But 1-7, I think. Yeah, I was going to say, I think that was his shir this week. Either way, so the Rambam tells us as follows, and again, I quoted the English here only. Does anybody know, by the way, my policy on why I only quote English for the Mor Nevuchim?
The original's Arabic.
Exactly, the original's Arabic. So quoting Hebrew and then bringing an English translation to Hebrew is not particularly valuable if you've got an English translation that potentially is directly from the Arabic or at least influenced by it. I do it also with Refersh often. I'll just read English from him because that English certainly was translated directly from his German. Anyways, so man's actions are divided as regards their object into four classes. They're either purposeless, unimportant, in vain, or good. I was going to say three strikes, you're out, and then one decent one. Unimportant, and we skipped a little bit, are such actions by which a trivial object is sought, an object that is not necessary and is not of great use. This is the case when a person dances without seeking to benefit his digestion by that exercise. That's why people used to dance around. Or perform certain actions for the purpose of causing laughter. That's considered unimportant. And he says, such actions are certainly mere pastimes. So people might say that about sports, right? So thinking of our sports so far, you might say this is just a pastime. You're allowed to do it. It's just unimportant. It's not something valuable. Whether an action belongs to this class or not depends on the intention of those who perform it and on the degree of their perfection. For many things are necessary or very useful in the opinion of one person and superfluous in the opinion of another. E.g., and here is examples of things that are necessary or very useful for some people and unnecessary for others. What are they? Bodily exercise in its different kinds is necessary for the proper preservation of health in the opinion of him who understands the science of medicine. Writing is considered as very useful by scholars. When people take exercise by playing with the ball, wrestling, stretching out the hands, or keeping back the breathing, or do certain things as preparation for writing, shape the pen and get the paper ready, such actions are mere pastimes in the eyes of the ignorant, but the wise do not consider them as unimportant. So now still really talking about, again, not the sports element, although we see some sort of wrestling, playing with the ball, certainly things that are moving towards sports, but still I would say falling in the falling under the category of physical actions, physical education, whatever you want to call it. That was not the right word. But either way, you understand what I'm saying. The wise don't consider those things unimportant because they realize the value of them. And obviously, something that we need to set from the forefront is doing actions like these to benefit people's bodies is certainly a good thing, even on the individual level, forgetting about it as an organized sport. But certainly to keep fit, fitness is something very, very valuable and should be valuable, as the Rambam says. Useful are such actions as serve a proper purpose, being either necessary or useful for the purpose which is to be attained. On the other hand, right, if people are doing this without knowing what the values are, or for no value whatsoever, meaning two people can be exercising, says the Rambam. One person is smart and knows what he's doing, and therefore that's something very important to the other person. It just looks foolish. That's because of their lack of knowledge. Now, not to say in reality that the exercise won't benefit that second party just as much. It will, but in terms of the Rambam's way of looking at it, from the perspective of the person who does not know, engaging in exercise is a very stupid thing to do. That's really the way that he's presenting it. He's looking at it from a philosophical point to say that, yes, it's true, this does have some inherent value, which we realize as proof, the wise people who understand its value and do it, it's considered very necessary. On the other hand, when we do any actions that we don't really think are very useful, we shouldn't be wasting our time doing them. Obviously, in the Rambam's ideal world, everybody should know the values of such actions and do them for those purposes. And again, he continues, right? This division of man's actions is, as I believe, not open to any objection. For every action is either intended for a certain purpose or is not intended. And if intended for a certain purpose, that purpose may be important or unimportant, is sometimes attained and sometimes missed. So up until now, right, we've been talking about fitness, physical activity, maybe, again, certain things that are looking like sports. We've talked about playing with a ball. We've talked about wrestling. But we haven't really talked about sports really as a competition, or certainly not as a group involvement, and certainly not for any purpose. That all changes with this next source, which is a mission.
Sorry. I'm just curious. I'm sure there's a whole range of answers, but I'm just curious, what value is fitness given in yeshivas right now?
It really has a range of answers. Different yeshivas, I would say most yeshivas, if not all yeshivas, encourage fitness in terms of when you've got some spare time, go out and play basketball. Even the more right-wing Haredi yeshivas in Israel, even in closed Israeli societies, are moving in that direction. Encouraging it as you should be going to the gym every single morning, I would say, is a lot further away. But certainly when I was in yeshiva, an American yeshiva, in Yeshiva Saras Moshe in Yerushalayim, there were plenty of guys who would go jogging all the time at nights. There was a basketball court on the roof. People who used to play basketball all the time. The yeshiva actually had, because Purim, right, when you're in Yerushalayim, is on the 15th of Adar. So usually sometime around the 14th, the yeshiva would actually organize a March Madness where they'd make a 3-on-3 tournament. It was always very, very fun to partake in. They'd, you know, have rackets that people could not bet on, of course, but win some monetary prize if you predicted right. Anyways, all sorts of interesting stuff. I do believe there are a range of views, though. I think there are very few places which believe it to be negative, so long as it's in moderation. If it's something that kids are too focused on, they do disapprove. I think that's a general sort of right-wing approach. As you move, you know, further towards the modern Orthodox side of things, you will see probably, you know, more serious attitudes towards it, saying, yeah, you know, be fit, stay strong. Certainly in army-like programs, and yeshivot hester, that's obviously something of prime importance. So here's where we get to the interesting part of things. In source number 6, which we're going to have to speed up here because I see, although in addition to our late start and our distraction with the video, we now have, some ground to cover. The Mishnah Niyoma tells us the following. If you were in the Beis HaMikdash and you were deciding policy as to how Kohanim should get to choose which parts of the Avoda they do, specifically, who would be able to remove the ashes from the Mizbeach? Well, says the Mishnah, Barishana originally, Kol Mishra Atzeli Trumat HaMizbeach Torem. Anybody who wanted to remove the ashes, do Trumat HaDeshen, okay? When we've quoted the Trumat HaDeshen previously, that's what it's based off of. It's based off these words, Litrumat HaDeshen. So he, whoever wants to clean it off, Ubizman Shehen Merubin. Now, what would they do if there were a lot of Kohanim? There's 10 Kohanim standing there, and they would all like to clean off the Mizbeach. So what do you do? Says the Mishnah in Yoma, Ratzin Ve'olin Bakevesh. You had a ramp there. Big, long ramp to get up to the Mizbeach. So the Kohen Gadol, so to say, this wasn't actually what the Kohen Gadol would do, but so to say, the Kohen Gadol would stand there with his shotgun. He'd say, 3, 2, 1, shoot it up, or a pistol, or whatever. Boom, all the Kohanim take off running up the ramp. Up they go, the first one to the top wins. Kol HaKodem Et Chaver HaBarba HaMot Zecha. Whoever, again, won the race, or reached within 4 cubits of the top, and they would be the person who was allowed to do Trumat HaDeshen that day. Vim Hayu Shnehen Shavin. What if there was a tie? Then they would do, again, some other type of chance lottery, which we will not talk about. Now, the next Mishnah, though, tells us that this wasn't necessarily the best idea. What happened was it was neck and neck, two people racing. So what do you do when you're racing someone and it's neck to neck? Kapow! So he pushes him, the guy falls down, broke his leg. The Kevancher U Betin Shebainli De Sakana, once Betin saw that this was coming to the point of danger, Hitkinu Shalo Yehu Tormim Et HaMizbeach Ela Bapais. They agreed that no, it should always be done by lottery, no more racing up the ramp of the Mizbeach in order to determine who gets to do Trumat HaDeshen in the morning. So here we actually see that this was something people were doing in the Beis HaMikdash to determine who would get to do something. You had a race, and whoever would win would get to do something special and holy. That's really moving in the direction of sport now. And we see this was something done in a holy place. Now, we see that there are pitfalls, somewhat of a pun intended, you know, to having races up the Mizbeach, and it's clear that what can happen is, you know, things don't always end well. But if you thought that was bad, right, and emotions are high, wait till you read the next story. A scary, scary story from the Tosefta that is brought in the Gemara in Yoma, where we'll just read the first part. We'll read it in English. The sage is taught in the Tosefta, in source number 7. An incident occurred where there were two priests who were equal as they were running and ascending the ramp. One of them reached the 4 cubits before his colleague, who then, out of anger, took a knife and stabbed him in the heart. That got a little out of control, in a hurry. Okay, by the way, if you just read the Gemara, okay, it's unclear, actually, which one stabbed the other one. You may make the argument, based on reading the Gemara, that it was actually the victor who stabbed the loser in, like, a moment of, aha! Which, again, you can kind of see when you look at some of the sports play today and the emotion, really, that goes into some of the more intense moments, I could see how that might be a lesson that the Gemara is trying to teach us. Not that the loser came after the winner, but that's certainly possible. I didn't take a look at the Mefarshim. This is just something that I noticed when I was reading it quickly. And yes, Rabbi Tzadok gets up, and he basically says, oh my goodness, what is going on? We're in the Beis HaMikdash here. You know, he says, normally the rule is, for the case of Egla Arufa, right, if you find a corpse in between two cities, you measure to which city to see who should be held responsible. He says, who should we measure to? Where should we measure to? Should we measure to the city of Yerushalayim or to the Azar of the Beis HaMikdash? Like it's just, you know, his point was, like, this, how low have we fallen? Everybody burst into tears, and obviously that was also a contributing factor to why this got canceled. But we see that, yes, sports were part and parcel of Jewish life, even in the Beis HaMikdash, where this was something being used to determine winners and losers, some sort of physical fitness test against one another. And there are other cases as well. Rav Stav bring lots of different references, some of which I actually found with this shiur, he was a lot harder to follow with his references. There were a number of references that I looked up that either, in my opinion, were slightly misrepresented. And I say that with, you know, the utmost respect for Rav Stav, but we will talk about a couple of cases which I felt were inappropriate, you know, inappropriately citing cases as precedent. That was one, but also some of the ones I just couldn't find. Like, I looked up the source and it didn't seem to say anything about that. So there are definitely many, many cases of physical activities that were used as some sort of sporting method, even in those times, obviously having to be careful about the fact that sports can get dangerous. But who says that sports are a good thing? Maybe we should say, you know what, it's not worth it to have these dangers of people getting too competitive and pushing each other and knifing each other. Maybe sports is just a bad thing. Maybe we should just leave that off as is and say, you know what, forget the whole idea. We tried it. It didn't work. Right? Those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it. Maybe we should say sports are something which are not good and did not continue and should not continue. And for that now, we'll really look to the rest of the shiur to see whether or not sports retained their place in Jewish history and in halacha, or whether they lost their place in Jewish history. And the first source that we'll see is one that seems pretty clear. Tur Shimon. Okay, there's a city called Tur Shimon. It used to provide, in source number 8, 300 loaves of bread for the poor every Erev Shabbos. And the Gemara tells us that it was destroyed. Why was it destroyed, asks the Yerushalmi. Well, there are two opinions. One says it's because of Znut, or other versions have Zonot, which all means the same thing. There was a big prostitution issue in that city. That's one possibility as to why it was destroyed. The other possibility as to why it was destroyed, you will not believe this, Shayu Misachakin Bekadur, because they used to play ball. So we've got two potentially equal reasons, which is what seems so crazy about this, right? The city was destroyed, why? Either because of some sexual misconduct issues in the city, or because they played ball. That's bizarre. Well, what could be the problem with playing ball? Okay, so the Korban Haedah gives us two possibilities. Korban Haedah is a commentary on the Yerushalmi, by the way, for those of you who are unfamiliar. Shayu Misachkin Bekadur. So he says, option number one is Bishabbat, right? We're already talking about it. They used to give to the poor on Erev Shabbos. So maybe they're playing with the ball on Shabbos, and playing ball on Shabbos is not something that people should be doing, as we're going to see, actually taking a look at the halachos of it in a moment. Inami, says the Korban Haedah, which I would have thought is the simple read, Shayu Mevalin Yaveyem Behen Velo Iskupa Torah, that they were wasting their time with it, and they weren't learning Torah, Meaning, the point is that playing ball ever is a bad idea. Playing ball is just not a good activity, not an activity that one should be taking part in. That being the case, okay, he gives one reason. They weren't learning Torah. You could say it's very dangerous, it's this, it's bad in this way, it's bad in that way. But certainly this Gemara displays a really negative attitude towards sports. And I can tell you this is not just individuals, right? Why? Because we're talking about a city that was destroyed. So we're talking about a communal activity of sorts here. However, the Korban Eidah must not have had access to the parallel Medrash Eicha Rabbah, which is quoted by some of the Mefarshim on Shulchan Aruch here, because Shulchan Aruch actually makes mention in the Beis Yosef, or Yosef Karo makes mention of this Gemara. And there we have an equivalent story. And we'll read the English for this one. Tur Shimon would export 300 loaves of bread, and why was it destroyed? Asks the Medrash, if it was due to the prostitutes, but there was only one prostitute, and they removed her from the city. So Rav Huna says that no, it wasn't because of the prostitution. It was rather because they played ball on Shabbat. In this version, it says explicitly, Shayum esachkin bekadur b'Shabbat, and therefore, it's very, very clear when we've got these same two stories, this one elaborates and explains to us in more detail that, in fact, it was because they played ball, and it was because they played ball on Shabbos. Now, based on this, basically, Shulchan Aruch paskins, Asur lischok b'Shabbat b'Yom Tov b'kadur. It's prohibited to play with a ball on Shabbos and Yom Tov. The Rama tells us no. V'yesh matirin v'nahagula hakel, based on Tosfos, and as we'll see many other Mefarshim, some permit it, and in fact, our custom is to be lenient. So if we're looking at how this came down generations, we've gone a complete 360 from the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi, on the one hand, is saying it's so bad, we're even thinking that it might even be usher to do on weekdays to engage in sports playing. We've got to the point now where the Rama is telling us the Jewish custom is to play sports on Shabbos. Whoa. Okay. And it's based on a Tosfos, so we're going to see it's based on some other sources as well. Now, noting that this doesn't give you sort of a blanket heter to do whatever you want when it comes to sports on Shabbos. The Mishnah Berurah here notes a whole variety of possibilities of problems. I'll run through some of them that are mentioned by him, some of them that are not mentioned by him. Okay, the potential issue, Shulchan Aruch brings this in the siman about Muktzah, I believe. Certainly one of the big issues people talk about is such a ball Muktzah? Again, it's easy to defend that when the ball is set aside for this, we don't know what types of balls they were playing with back then. But nowadays, when you've got balls that are set aside for things, it's clear that that's one of the reasons why people are lenient and say, you know, you can't call a ball Muktzah when it's specifically meant to be played with. Now, there are other issues. Certainly playing in places where there is no Eruv, in a Rishut HaRabim, or even in a Carmelite, which are, again, considered to be public spaces, at least for, you know, biblical or rabbinic versions of what's prohibited for carrying, and then you wouldn't be able to pick up the ball and carry it, or move it around in those ways. That would be an issue that people have to be concerned about. If there was an Eruv, though, or an Yontif, that wouldn't be a problem. There's also a concern for what you might do to the ground when you're playing. Then if anybody here watches baseball, you'll notice a lot of the time digging little holes, patching up little holes in the ground, that is also certainly going to be a Shabbos problem. Other people talk about it not being in the spirit of Shabbos. People talk about people getting distracted with it on Shabbos and not going to the, you know, Pirkei Avos. They're busy playing baseball in the park on Shabbos afternoon, so they miss Pirkei Avos. Whatever the case is, there are a number of issues that can apply to Shabbos, and these might be the reasons why we should be hesitant, but at the end of the day, if we cover all the bases, pun intended again, this is just a terrible shir tonight, we've had so many. If we really take care of all of these issues, then ball playing on Shabbos is not something that, you know, the majority of Ashkenazi poskim would object to.
Is there an issue of working up a sweat? Isn't there something like that?
So is something of working up a sweat. That's getting back to what we had earlier in the Rabbeinu Hananel and exercising on Shabbos. And for the purpose, what purpose are you playing sports? That's certainly another factor. Very, very good. But why is it that people would play, I think, is a bigger question. Why is it that people were playing ball on Shabbos?
On your Shabbos.
That's exactly it. You look in source number 13. It says the Machzor Vitri, who's a student of Rashi. V'lischok bekadur sher korin pluta. I wasn't able to find out what that was. And Matir Rabbeinu, our rabbi, allows it. Mipnei Simchat Yom Tov. This was a fun thing. People were playing sports. They were enjoying themselves. So this was a reason why people were playing it. And so much so that Halacha considers this a positive attribute of sports. It keeps people happy. People enjoy playing, so therefore, we're going to give this as a reason that people should be lenient when it comes to playing ball on Shabbos. How crazy is that? So really, at this point, we see that sports are something that, despite a couple of sources that point out dangers or worries, again, playing ball on Shabbos, if done in the wrong way, can cause your city to be destroyed. Getting too into your sports to the point where you may stab someone or push someone, physical violence in sports, despite the fact that there are some indications that physical violence that's agreed upon in advance may, under certain circumstances, be permitted, those things are cautionary. Those things tell you, be careful when you're playing sports. But at the end of the day, throughout Jewish history and throughout halacha, we see very, very clearly the pattern emerging that, yes, sports are valuable from a Jewish point of view in halacha and all of that. And I'm glad to see we have people playing right outside.
So, you arranged that, didn't you?
What?
You arranged that.
Yes, I actually told them to come by now. That's exactly what I did. And in fact, if you look to later examples, in the previous Pesach to go from this year, page 9, Rabbi J.J. Schachter quoted, he collected, I guess, from various sources. Some of these I'm aware of the original sources for, some of them I'm not. But he writes, engaging in physical exercise, and he's back here with exercise, but it applies to sports too, as we'll see. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik used to box with his students, which is something, by the way, that Rav Soloveitchik said directly, recorded in a lecture, and is written in one of the Rav Speaks books. I think there are some people that are a little skeptical of that, understandably so. It's kind of hard to imagine, but at the end of the day, you know, there are sources for that. He used to box with the students, Rav Yosef Yisrael Horovitz and Rav Aaron Walkin, okay? Which, again, are two very, very big rabbinic figures of very recently used to wrestle one another as young men in Riga. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky was known to be the best swimmer in Lomza Yeshiva, and Rav Shlomo Gorin, later the Ashkenazi chief rabbi of Israel, reported that he did 50 push-ups a day. And this really continues. This is just where we stand right now. Now, I'm not disregarding the fact that it's true. There are authorities, especially in the Haredi world, where this is less acceptable, as we mentioned earlier, that look at these things as a little bit of a bidiyev and say, well, if it's necessary. But the fact is, where we come from with certainly American sensibilities and even, you know, anything left of extreme right in Israel does view these things as quite positive, even in the realm of sports. So that being said, I wanted to take a look at one of the other concerns with sports, namely that it's not Jewish. So it's true. We've seen enough of a history of Jewish sports. We've seen enough of a history of Jewish fitness. But what about all those complaints and worries? It comes from the Greeks, it comes from this, it comes from the that. And for that, I really just wanted to talk about this because I had this great source that I absolutely had to discuss and I couldn't hold myself back from. And that is summarized so nicely in this article by a person by the name of Avraham Shemesh in Old Testament Essays, some publication. And he's actually talking about the question that he's dealing with is why Paro was going down to the Nile every day and why Moshe was visiting him. So he quotes from Ibn Kaspi. Ibn Kaspi was a borderline Rishon, not in terms of time when he lived. Certainly he lived in the time of the Rishonim, lived in the, you know, you can see here, late 1200s, 1300s. He is sort of an interesting character. He wrote a number of Sfarim, but philosophically was looked upon it a little bit outside the camp. But anyways, here's what he writes in terms of explaining why Moshe was visiting Paro down at the Nile. So we're going to jump down to the indented section, which is his words in Tiras Kesef. He writes, translation of his words. Anyways, notably, the king of Egypt only left his house on Tuesdays and Saturdays when he would go in the morning to a known spacious area by the Nile to play with a little ball with his horsemen and ministers. And thus it was said, confront him on the bank of the Nile, because in my opinion, Moses came to him on a small ship on the Nile and spoke to him as Paro was standing by the riverside. When he finished speaking, he went on his way. That's one version. Now, in Matzreif Lekesef, which is another sefer of his on the Torah, he expands what he had to say. I have seen the custom. Okay, and we just turned the page. We're in source number 15 already. Wow. Okay. I have seen the custom of the king of Egypt in our time as well, where 2 days a week, on the third day and seventh day, the king of Egypt goes out with his chariot and horsemen to a designated place by the Nile to play there all day with a little ball. And maybe Moses could only speak to Pharaoh on those days, because on other days he, Pharaoh, would be in his room. Because since Pharaoh would be at the Nile with his netting and tent on those days, Moses could take a small ship and could confront him from the ship. So why is he going down to visit Paro at the Yaor? Because Paro's there playing sports with his men. That's literally what he says. And if you read through it, it describes the game of polo, which is actually remarkably similar to hockey, if you read the description here. And we'll read through some of this next part, okay? Ibn Kasbi thinks that the reason such a specific time frame was utilized in order to hold the meeting was because normally Pharaoh did not tend to leave his house, aside from 2 days a week on which he went out early in the morning to play ball. Without contending with the question of why Pharaoh remained at home, we can try and understand what game this was and whether its description is perhaps anachronistic. Judging by his description, Ibn Kasbi may be referring to the game of polo, which was the most popular ball game in the Arab world in medieval times, as it combined two elements to which Arabs were partial, horses and competitiveness. See figure 2, I didn't bring that here, I apologize. The game was played by kings and noblemen with the capacity to keep horses, and it also required riding skills, as did hunting and fighting. The game also required satyrs and stirrups, which did not exist in Moses' time. According to medieval custom, the game was played on horseback. Competitors were divided into two groups, and they held a long stick with a crooked end. Each of the groups would endeavor to insert a small ball made of leather, or sometimes silver, into the goal, which consisted of two posts stationed at some distance from each other. Really sounds like hockey. Maybe more like lacrosse, but it's polo. The game of polo was very popular among the Mamluk elite, as they believed that it helped maintain the combative skills of both riders and horses. And by the way, this is something that gets played down, but a lot of what sports and fitness were about originally was so you would be a good warrior. It still is that way somewhat, but that was really the value of sports and fitness in those days. But anyways, he talks about this and goes on, and whether or not this is reality or not, he doesn't think that this is a possible explanation. But anyways, very, very fascinating nevertheless. And I figured that would make a good segue for, is there something wrong of, you know, uvichuko sehem lo selechu, to play sports like these, or even worse, to watch sports like these? Why do I say that? Well, there's a very, very famous Rashi. And this is the Rashi that everybody always quotes to you, because it kind of sounds like an English word, because it's a Greek word. But anyways, here we go. Uvichuko sehem lo selechu. Mahiniyah HaKasuf, source 16, Shalom Amar. What is scripture left unsaid when it spoke of the deeds of the Egyptians and Canaanites? That it felt compelled to add uvichuko sehem lo selechu, right? Because this is at the end of the Parshas Ha'arayos. It begins with, Kimasei Eretz Mitzrayim asher yishavtem ba lo tasuch maasei Eretz Kanaan asher nevi v'yitchem shama. Okay? Also, you should not follow. So we open with, don't follow the ways of the Egyptians. We've got ways of the Egyptians here, people. Hockey. Don't follow the ways of the Canaanites. Okay, what was left unsaid? So says the Rashi, Ela elu nimuso chelahen. Okay, but by these latter words, he refers to their social customs. Dvarim hachakukim lahem. Things which have assumed for them the character of law. Kigon, as for instance, tartiot v'itstadiot. What are tartiot? Tartiot are feeders. Itstadiot are stadiums. Or stadia, really, to be correct. Rabbi Meir, Omer el dake mori shemanu chachamim. He says no, it refers to something else. He disagrees with this opinion. He says no, it has to do with the ways of the Amorites, which were all sorts of superstitious practices that the rabbis have enumerated again in a whole bunch of places. So, if that's the case, if we read this at face value, may I go down to watch a Raptors game? No! Tartiot v'itstadiot. Those are prohibited. It's prohibited to go to stadiums. Just like the Greeks used to gather in their stadiums to watch the Olympics, which has its whole host of Avodah Zarah issues on its own, obviously. Not to mention, again, the worship of image that those people had in general. But this is something that seems to fall under that category. So what's up? Can we attend sports events in a stadium? And if that's the case, should we even be playing these sports, which began like this? Should we be watching these sports even outside of a stadium, based on a concern like this? And it goes further. There are other concerns. The concern of Moshav Leitzim, okay? The seat of the scornful in some. If we look in source number 17. Titania, Ein Ochin Leitzdadinin, Mipnei Moshav Leitzim. You should not go to stadiums because they're considered the seat of the scornful. Rabbi Natan Matir, Mipnei Shnei Dvarim. Rabbi Natan says, I'll allow you to go. I'll tell you why it's not Moshav Leitzim, or why, if it is, it's permitted. He says, maybe it may be Moshav Leitzim, but I'll tell you why. Mipnei Shnei Dvarim, two reasons. Number one, Mipnei Shetzoveach Umatzil. Number one, there are people there, right? And, you know, they would be fighting with all sorts of things, and people would be executed. So if you would scream loudly enough, you might be able to save someone's life as a spectator. Okay. Number two, Because at least if you don't save the guy, says the Gemara, because even if you can't, you know, save the guy, at the very least you can testify that her husband's dead. You saw him get mauled and killed. He said, no, but this is really serious, right? If a Jewish person, which they were often persecuted in this way, would get sent to these stadiums and have some animal attack him or whatever was going on, it was important that these things should happen. And therefore he says, it's true, it's a really bad environment, but someone's got to do the dirty work. And maybe, again, if you scream loud enough, you can save their life. So we've got now two reasons to avoid stadiums. One, Moshe avleits him, and two, potentially, v'chukosam lo selechu. How do we deal with this? So here's where I said I felt some sources were misrepresented, and specifically this next source over here, I felt was really inappropriately presented by Rav Stav. Rav Stav basically says, well, we don't need to worry. Clearly it's the case that these Gemaras do not refer to modern-day sports in any way, form, or fashion, which is a fair argument to make. And look, he says, Mahari Bruna says it's obvious that you're allowed to go watch horse racing. What does that make it sound like? He says this is not a concern because these modern-day sports, the way it was presented at least, are nothing like what they used to be doing in stadiums. And therefore, don't worry about it too much. That was when, you know, they were killing people, they were doing all sorts of other terrible stuff. Nowadays, it doesn't matter. Now, what does the Mahari Bruna actually say? So he says, Nishalti Avazatim Mutar Latzeit V'Lirot Simchat Arelim. If it's permitted to go watch the happiness of the non-Jews, says, can you go watch horse racing? That basically whoever's horse is fastest will win money. If it's compared to trapping animals and birds. By the way, that's what Rashi says for another part of the Gemara over here. It's not for this exact part of the Gemara, but it's a similar part of the Gemara. Maybe Kanigin or something like that. That's what's discussed there. And Rashi says that they used to trap these things. So he says, Vihitarti and I permitted it. Why? Dilo dami klau. He says it's not similar to going to stadiums. Why? Ki ein ze, what's the next word? Lesimcha. It's not to rejoice with them. It's not to get involved in the game as a spectator, he says. Ach lilmod umnut. He says, you know why people go to this? This is what he says. He says, I'm telling you the question that was asked to him. I'm not telling you whether people do this nowadays. I'm telling you the question that was asked to him. And he says, the reason why it's permitted is because you're not going to rejoice and celebrate and take part in the social scene. You're going to do what? To learn. You're going to learn how to make money. You're going to learn a job. Why? The people were learning. How is it that these people trained their horses? Who is the fastest? How did they train? This was a practical way for people to find out what was the best way to breed race horses and fast horses that would bring them money. Right? And he says, I've seen people who have done this. But you're not going in this case, says Mahari Bruna, to celebrate and take part in the sports game. You're going for work. That's a pretty far cry from saying, oh, the two cases are entirely dissimilar because that was in those days when they were killing people, and now that's not at all what he's saying. But what is interesting to see, it says, Ach bahames apakna, imutar lech lirot kishem esamchim yachad lirchov ze keneged ze bimotot vechadim shekorin letaden. Okay? He says, what I'm not sure, is if it's permitted to go watch jousting. Okay? Basically, people running at each other on horses, right? They're riding with sticks. And again, kadim, maybe that's just another word for shields, literally means jugs. I don't know if there's some other sport that I'm aware of. But yes, they would be riding at each other with sticks, maybe hitting each other. It sounds like jousting to me. And he says, I'm not sure if you'd be allowed to go to that. So really the question for here is, what is his question when it comes to watching jousting? Meaning, if he agrees that there you're going to watch and partake as a spectator in, you know, what's taking place in the social scene, and he's not sure about this, I do see a reason to say, you know, maybe he is more makel because of differences from the Gemara, even though that may not be for work. But if he's saying you're inspecting the horses when they're jousting, which I think is the simple way to read what he's saying, then I don't think you have any indication from here. However, Just because you don't have an indication that way from the Ma'ariv Baruna doesn't mean you don't have an indication from the rest of the way that the Gemaras are being explained. When you look, if you read the entire Avodah Zarah 18b, you will see it's clearly an entirely different atmosphere than some sports games. Not all sports games. But like the things that were going on there and what people were gathered for to watch, some of it rings true in modern day sports, but other parts don't. And you could perhaps make such an argument. Rav Moshe Feinstein actually makes that exact argument in regards to the fact that it's not considered uvechukotehem lo telechu. These stadiums are very different than their stadiums. However, I'm very clear up front, and again, this was also unfortunately misquoted by Rav Stav. Rav Stav quoted Rav Moshe as saying that it is a problem of uvechukotehem lo telechu. Rav Moshe does not say that, as you can see very, very clearly when we read it now. But Rav Moshe does say it's a problem of Moshe Vleitzim and Bittul Torah and everything else. He's not pro people going to sports games, even nowadays. But he does say that it's different and it does not fall under uvechukotehem lo telechu. And in fact, there are postgame, as we're going to see, that even allow one to attend sports games nowadays, saying that there is that difference, and it's not even Moshe Vleitzim, if provided that the environment is one of even just cheering on the sports team, perhaps, and not, you know, going out of control while drinking, enjoying other people hurting, and, you know, committing violent acts, and coming together for immoral purposes, so long as there's not too much nivel peh, so long as there's not too much pritus. So there is what to deal with, but let's take a look at Rav Moshe. He basically says, summarize it outside, because I see we're finishing up here. He says, the question was to him, is it prohibited to go because of uchukosem lo silechu? He says, I'll tell you. The concept of uvechukosehem lo seilechu is not relevant. First of all, what does the word uvechukosehem mean? What's a chok?
A law.
A law, a rule. Says Rav Moshe, this was only specifically where there was a rule for them to go do this, because even if we didn't know the purpose for the rule, we could assume that it was due to Avodah Zarah. Meaning, if they're just doing some random thing they had to do all the time, we assume it stems from something non-kosher in terms of their practice. Or certainly if they had a practice that was related to Avodah Zarah that they would just do, that was something worried about uvechukosehem lo telechu. So when they would all have to go to watch whatever sporting event it was, that might be considered uvechukosehem lo telechu because it was a rule. Now it's not a rule. Number two, okay, he says, it's also where it's purposeless. We don't apply the rules of chukos agoy where there's some purpose involved. And he says it's very, very clear that now, okay, these are for the purposes of entertainment. And that's why, he says, if you look back in our Gemara that we brought, what's the concern about going to these places? It's a concern of Moshav Leitzim, of people sitting around, you know, Bittul Torah. Those are some of the concerns of attending these events, right? And again, it's not just for that time, but it causes you to be distracted on a continual basis, says Rav Moshe. And again, certainly, he says, but a theater found now in our country, and in other countries around the world, it's not at all relevant or related to idol worship. And he says, in fact, I'll bring you the biggest proof. What other gods would we be worried about? We'd be worried about the nations around us, and if they're doing something in particular, we may assume that it goes to their god. He said, if you ask a priest, what do you think of people going to hockey games? Priest, what do you think of people going to the theater? He says, if you ask the priest in my day, what would they tell you? They'd be against it, he says. So how can you possibly dream that this is something that's happening because society is involved in Avodah Zarah? The Avodah Zarah, so to say, I'm not saying that he's considering Christianity Avodah Zarah, that's a separate topic of discussion, but he's saying even the other religions are all saying we don't like this either. He says if you ask a Muslim, same thing. Right? So he says it's very hard to defend the fact that this would in any way, shape, or form be considered chukos agoy.
You talked earlier about Arelim, going to watch Arelim. What about Israel fielding an Olympics team?
That's certainly something that, there was a story last year, I forgot to actually bring it on the source sheet, of a rabbi who was caught at one of these games, soccer game, one with his grandkids, and, you know, spoke all about it from Israel. I mean, was it Rav Leff who was last year? Anybody remember this? I don't remember exactly who it was, but, they interviewed him afterwards, and he said, you know, this is, you know, I went with my grandkids, there was a time for me to spend time with them, and it was fine, and...
Of course, we're not going to go see women's gymnastics in the Olympics.
Again, you're getting back to the point, which the question is, where does this cross the line of Prisos? Where does this cross the line of Moshav Leitzim? And those are very, very good questions that really, you know, we have to be honest with ourselves about.
You've got the cheerleading issue and all those other...
Right, so again, I mean, as we'll see next week, Rav Stav tends to be fairly lenient when it comes to the closing eyes rule. I remember when I first saw his book, I took a look through the Haskamas, because I want to see the Haskamas. And in one of the Haskamas, he says, it's a wonderful book, but I have to be moche. I have to protest. That's pretty strong language. What are you protesting? So Rav Stav writes in relation to movies, you know, certain heterim, if the movie contains inappropriate material. And the guy says, what are you talking about? You can't do that. So again, you know, being realistic about the circumstances that one will be in is very, very important when it comes to going to these things. There are some sports games that I can tell you. It is entirely a wild, mad social scene. People are looking, you know, the loudest cheering goes on when someone, you know, punches someone else in the nose. Maybe that might be closer to a Moshav Leitzim type circumstance and to a Bittul Torah type circumstance and to a, you know, not doing the greatest things. On the other hand, you know, as even though Rav Moshe says it's not uvichuko seyam lo silechu, he does say that again. It's he said there are many, many problems, both relating to tznius and relating to bittul Torah and Moshav Leitzim. However, if you look at what Rabbi Dr. Meir writes in the Jewish Ethicist, and again, these are such sentiments are echoed by other poskim as well. He writes. We could say something similar about spectator sports. As we mentioned, the Talmud identifies a Roman Colosseum with the biblical seat of the scoffers. This characterization is hardly surprising, given the extremely cruel and violent nature of the quote-unquote entertainment found there, gladiators, bullfights, and the like. Yet we have to admit that many modern sporting events also have their share of violence, and the eminent authority of Moshe Feinstein wrote that contemporary spectator sports can also be considered the seat of the scoffers. He writes that attendance at these events can cause a person to forget his religious obligations. Is this meant to be a blanket condemnation of watching sports events? I cannot speak for Rabbi Feinstein, but I can point out that the Tiferes Yerushalayim Yeshiva, which he headed, had its own sports teams and competitions, and I doubt that the stands were empty. Evidently, he acknowledged that watching sports can have some value, though obviously it's not commensurable with the value of Torah study, which occupied the overwhelming majority of students' time and effort. I think that the critical distinction here is the purpose of the activity. The main purpose of the sports team of the yeshiva, blah, 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 he goes on. But, at the end of the day, he talks about some values, both from having sports to play, but even from watching sports. At the end, he quotes, you know, a few lines up from the bottom. I recall once that Avraham Lichtenstein urged us to spend more hours in the Beit Midrash by referring to the example of legendary forward Larry Bird, who was always the first one to arrive at practice and the last one to leave, and not because he needed it. Okay? So, again, there are many valuable things that we can take out from sports. In fact, I believe for my bar mitzvah, somebody gave me, Rabbi Dov Lipman, who's a Chaver Knesset. I believe before he was famous. What?
He's not anymore.
No longer, correct. But, before he became famous, I believe he wrote a book on sports lessons. I believe that someone gave him a message, but I have to go back and check if that was him, but if I remember correctly, it was written by him. There are lessons to be learned from sports. You know, as I was joking at Shal Shalasi's last few weeks, you know, no shir or Dvar Torah is complete without some reference to the rafters these days. But there are definitely lessons that can be learned, and there are positive things to take out of them, but we really have to be honest with ourselves. And if we're dishonest with ourselves, we say, oh no, this is fine, this is great, this is good, but really it's not. We really aren't doing ourselves a favor by watching sports, certainly not live, and you know, even possibly engaging them. I should note also just one quick last comment as we end here. The fact that playing sports is permitted would lead us naturally to assume that watching them is fine too. Also, a lot of these concerns don't really apply to watching sports individually, for example, at home or even with family and friends in a positive environment. Again, I wouldn't say going to a bar would be one like that, but, you know, sitting around the TV at home, if people are enjoying watching a Raptors games, would be things that postgame like Rav Stav permit outright and certainly follow from the writings of Rabbi Meir and many, many other postgame nowadays that say it's true, we should have some reservations in certain cases, but in other cases, we see that Jewish history and halacha have embraced sports as something good to do, and maybe even something that has value in following. Thanks.
Correct.